I'm Dr. Jim Drakely, University of Illinois.
And I'm Phil Cardoso, an associate professor at the University of Illinois. And we just have a link to provide on a paper, on a symposium review that we have on nutrition strategies for improved health, production, and fertility during the transition period at the Journal of Dairy Science. In this symposium review here, we show a lot of the research done by our group and others on the pretty much methionine and lysine, right? The most limiting, especially in our world here.
It's a really, another really interesting area. The methionine story is especially interesting to me because methionine is involved in so many other aspects of metabolism other than just milk protein. And so things like the antioxidant status and possible epigenetic effects, the whole role as a methyl donor is a critical area. And I think we're starting to learn more about that, the relationships with methionine and choline and other methyl donors and how that's related to lipid metabolism. So the methionine story has been a fun one to get involved with. I know you guys have looked at lysine here in a recent experiment, and that's another story. I'll be interested in seeing how that plays out.
Building on that whole concept that, hey, we kind of know already a lot of things that, you know, methionine is doing around parturition, with methionine being at the concentration that we recommend, or at least that we think that's what we should be feeding dry cows or prepartum or pre-fresh close-up cows. I think there's much more certainty on what we should be feeding mid to late lactations or lactation cows. I don't think fresh cows are still very well understood on those recommendations that we make. Exactly. At least it's a point of start, right? You have to start somewhere. So not looking so much into the ratio, but really going to making sure the grams. So we really want it, but we are talking about having 100 grams of digestible lysine before calving, and we got 90 something. And then after calving, in that first 28 days, shoot for 200 grams of digestible lysine. We didn't use blood meal as a protein source on that trial, not just because of the variability that we could come into, but also to try to correlate a little bit better with diets outside the U.S., right, where pretty much nobody can feed blood meal like we can. So, yeah. So it's really interesting how much effect lysine is doing before calving, more so than at least after calving in the fresh period. If I could, you know, risk to say something, I would say that, you know, lysine before calving, or that pre-part, the pre-fresh period, at least 30 days before calving, it's really priming the cow. And I think a lot it has to do with the mammary gland and alveoli, and maybe how that has been stimulated by lysine that can go, you know, straight to the mammary gland. And then after calving, all that pool now can function, and then you can have more milk secretion. And that's where we saw that the prepartum, the pre-fresh lysine, caused an increase in energy-corrected milk, fat-corrected milk, all the solids, and a tendency to increase intake after calving as well. And I think after calving, when then you have the liver and you have a functioning mammary gland, then I think lysine is really working in a system with methionine to then cause all those effects. I don't think you can capture lysine, but I don't think you can capture the full effect of methionine without feeding lysine.
Right.
Would you agree?
I would. Yeah. I mean, we have to have all the key amino acids there and enough total amount and in the correct ratios to each other to maximize milk protein production.
Yeah, and I know that in another trial we saw the impact of heat stress on the mammary gland, we had a chance to do mammary gland biopsies, and how rumen-protected methionine actually helped those alveoli not to die as much as the ones that were in heat stress without methionine. So we already know there is some effect, or there is some functionality of amino acids in preserving alveoli function during heat stress. So, you know, this whole combination of heat stress, lysine, mammary gland before calving, that's something very interesting, I think.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's something that needs to be followed up on.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we also saw effects, but again, like I said, we are not there yet, but we saw some effects on, we follow some of those calves, right? So we are getting ready to have that data on calves having an improved growth, and also some of the inflammatory cells, we were able to measure them. There's again that belief that there is some in utero priming to that calf that can perform in that first 6 to 8 weeks differently than the ones coming from cows that did not receive rumen-protected lysine. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. Similar effects that Dr. Lohr's group has shown with methionine, and you've been involved in some of that work as well. So it's interesting what can happen. And the Florida group showed that with heat stress too, that cows that were cooled during the late dry period, those calves grew better than the calves from cows that were not cooled during heat stress. So that lots of things can happen that affect how the calves are going to be in terms of health right after calving, but also the ability to grow.
So why do you think there is a limitation on the usage of rumen-protected amino acids? And again, you know, you're talking about the rumen-protected amino acids as a source of reliable, consistent amino acids, but we are not discounting all the other ingredients in the diet that are providing amino acids to the cow. In the end of the day, that's what we want to know, right? The amount of digestible, metabolizable amino acids that the cow is consuming, and we want to target for that. So we have to go through a model, and then, you know, we know there are different models out there on how to tell us, yes, you're giving enough, no, you're not giving enough, and you need to supplement or to add. But I think, at least in my perspective, everybody should be worried about the amino acids and the amount of those metabolizable amino acids. And a first start could be a percentage of that metabolizable protein, a relationship with energy as well that we are feeding the cow. Yeah. But that needs to be accounted for that diet. Some ingredients may have a better profile of those amino acids, and you may have to use less rumen protected, or not even have to use it, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? That maybe some of the limitation is, am I using the model? Somebody else is using another model, and now we can't talk because
right.
The numbers are different, right?
I think that is an issue with the current NRC model, and the CNCPS systems will predict differently. And so it's, as you say, we should be working within one system consistently on a herd, but then it's hard to have that conversation with somebody that's using a different system. But I think we're learning. I think we're learning about amino acids, you know, we've known a lot for many years, but really putting it into practice now and using the models to predict what's happening on farms with the feed ingredients, and you know, learning that if you want to maximize lysine, you can't be using a lot of corn byproducts in the diet and things like that. And then being able to come along and top that off with some rumen protected amino acid is going to be a real winner.
Especially swine industry, right? Dr. Hans Stein, our department, he has his website and his spreadsheets with the changes in digestibility of amino acids as you heat soybean meal, right? And actually, he's already talking about the different types of soybean meal having different amounts of digestible amino acids and how the trend throughout all these years have changed, right? To having less digestible amino acids than maybe 10 years ago. So how the yields, you know, of soybeans in the field impact the amount of amino acids and digestibility of those. But he shows the treatments where he heated on purpose, right? Too much or too little, or didn't heat and then he feed that to cannulated pigs, and he can really determine the apparent digestibility. And it's amazing how it changes. And when you see some work from, I've read some stuff from Paul Kononoff talking about, hey, we are using the sources here and percentage as RUP, you may have this amount of methionine. However, the RUP is changing from 15 to 80%.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, so the amount that is undegradable, it has a huge change, even though the amount of amino acid per RUP could be the same, you know, could be 3% or 2.something%. But then, so yeah, big variation.
Yeah. Well, we still have a lot to learn. Before we sign off here, we should remind people about the Discover conference that's scheduled for this fall, assuming that we can actually hold that conference.
That's true. So
planning that.
This fall, that's going to be our 39th Discover conference on transition cows. And actually, the approach or the idea from the committee is try to bring the basics, so pretty much the physiology, but how is that impacting the day-to-day or more practical terms on how we feed, or how can we understand those physiological processes? So the idea is to have a lot of interaction and you have basic versus applied research going on at the same time during the section. So, and actually it's happening 10 years after you had one in Illinois. Is that right?
That's correct. And that one, I think, was 10 years after the first one. So,
so I think we had pretty good information on these three technologies. And it's a lot of information in this paper here that you guys can read, but I'm pretty sure there is still a lot for us to figure out. So if you guys have any questions or concerns, I'm going to have our emails here. But try to use this the link that you can access this paper for free for a certain amount of time. And the idea is not to, by any means, close the conversation about the strategies, but at least tell you about those three strategies that are pretty well segmented at this point.
I agree.
Final thoughts, Dr. Drakely?
No, it's been fun to talk about an area that I've been involved with all my career, and I think we've made progress, but there's still a lot of room for improvement.
Hopefully we can start a whole series on PaperCast mimicking a podcast or something, and we can arrest people around the world, our friends, to talk about their papers. Let's see what happens.
That'll be good.
Okay.
All right.